be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Nexus Leader Improving Access to Care through Telehealth. All lines will be placed on to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star and then watch your telephone keypad. If you would like to start your question, please press the pound key. Thank you. Champion Nursing America, please go ahead.
Great. Thank you so much, Nicole. Hi, everybody, and thank you so much for joining us. Good afternoon and good morning to you, folks who are west of the West Coast. So, so this is a pretty special webinar that we're hosting. This is the second in a two that we're hosting this year, where we are emphasizing people's access to care being improved through nurses as leaders in technology and innovation. And in this case, we're hearing from two nurses who are leaders in leading telehealth services. Registered nurses are vital in delivering high-quality telehealth. They lead the way in using telehealth to improve wellness for vulnerable populations. And not only are nurses delivering care and managing telehealth programs, they also provide organizational and public policy leadership on the increasing use of telehealth. Today, we will hear from two nurse leaders of telehealth services in large health systems. Their teams serve a range of people with various chronic needs, including pregnant women with diabetes and older adults requiring ventilator care. Participants will learn how nurses are leading telehealth initiatives to help people transition from acute care to home, and to help people of all ages obtain high-quality care at home. The Campaign for Action will also explore how state laws can be barriers in telehealth care, including the effect on state licensing laws for RNs and APRNs, and this topic aligns with AARP's mission to help empower older adults to live with dignity in a place of their choosing. Before we go any further, I do want to mention that we are recording today's webinar. And so if you miss a section or would like to pass it on to a colleague, which of course we highly recommend that you do, you can find the recording by going to www.campaignforaction.org/webinars. Also, we are happy to take questions from you throughout the webinar, and especially at the end of the presentation. If you have questions, we ask that you put them in the chat box and make sure you send your question to quote-unquote everyone. So now I'm thrilled to introduce you to our two speakers. First is Dr. Nina Antonetti. Dr. Antonetti is the president and CEO of Athena Works Telehealth Transformational Consultant and is currently the executive director of telehealth and clinical outreach at Southern Illinois University Medicine in Springfield, Illinois. Dr. Antonetti also served as Marshfield Clinic's telehealth director in Marshfield Clinic in Wisconsin, and she started her position there in 1997 after 20 years' experience in hospital-based healthcare. Dr. Antonetti has received attention for pioneering efforts in the development of telehealth, being one of the early professional success stories in the late 1990s at Marshfield Clinic's telehealth program. She quickly became one of the nation's leaders in business planning, provider and patient adoption, clinical operations, technology innovation, and legal and regulatory issues, reimbursement and payment, and the integration of telehealth into clinical care systems. She has a lot more accolades to share, but I'm going to cut to the quick and say that she has also been recognized for her international efforts to deploy telehealth initiatives and has worked in China to set up telehealth services between the U.S. and Hangzhou Jiaxing, China, as well as other organizations, and was invited to assist and work with Iran's Minister of Health and the University of Tehran in understanding how to deploy a national telehealth strategy for the people of Iran in 2010. Our second speaker is Ms. Tina Benton. Tina Benton is the program director of antenatal and neonatal guidelines and education learning system quote-unquote angels in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences and the Oversight Director of the Center for Distance Health. Benton assisted in the initial and ongoing development of angels from 2003 to the present. And prior to 2003, Benton served in the Obstetrics and Gynecology Division of Maternal Fetal Medicine as the statewide perinatal outreach nurse. Benton, along with the medical director, Dr. Curtis Lowry, accepted the American Telemedicine Association's Innovation Award for the Angels Program in 07, and in 2011, the UAMS Center for Distance Health received the Institutional Award as Best Program in the Nation. Tina received her BSN in nursing at Henderson State University in Arkadelphia, Arkansas, and she is a longstanding member of the Association of Women's Health, Obstetric and Neonatal Nurses, and is a member of Sigma Theta Tau International Honor Society of Nursing. And now I am happy to hand the presentation over to Dr. Nina Antonetti. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Winifred. I think it's interesting to listen to Tina's background. A lot of us who've been in this work for 20 years or more know each other, but it's really a great honor to be able to speak with someone like Tina and just get to know a little bit more about her. So I wanted to start with a few statistics on nursing in general, and many of you probably know this. The total workforce is about 3.15 million nurses, with the average age almost 44 years. And when I think about an aging nursing population, taking care of an aging population, and the fact that within about 5 years, the average age or life expectancy will be 125 years, I'm not sure exactly what nursing is going to look like when people live that old. Job growth has been about 15%, the average salary is around $62,000, with interestingly enough, $73,000 for male nurses and $61,000 for female nurses. And our profession, in terms of employment opportunities, occupation, pay, training, so forth and so forth, is likened to surveyors, cartographers, map makers, photogrammaticists, and first-line enlisted military supervisors, which, again, I think is also interesting because our profession is in the business of saving and preserving life and health and wellness, and we get paid slightly more than people, military supervisors, who are willing to actually give up their life for our country. So with that being said, I'm going to talk again a little bit about telehealth. If I ask all of you what your definition of telehealth would be, we'd probably get about 80 or so different definitions. And a lot of times when we, people like Tina and I, talk to organizations about telehealth, it's a kind of a head in the sand approach. Yeah, we kind of know what it is. We know we should be doing it, but we don't really know where to start. And so we're going to talk a little bit about what telehealth is, how it works, and then transition into some of the roles of nursing in telehealth and nursing leadership, and wrap up with some examples from our programs. So the definition of telehealth really is when the patient and the provider are in two separate locations. This can be simple things like teleradiology, patient accessing a web portal, all the way to very sophisticated physical exams and live interactive visits between patients. So it's really based on the use of electronic information and telecommunications technologies simply for the clinical care of patients. Telehealth in the last 20 years has taken on a lot of different models and a lot of different terminology, a lot of different formats. I got a question today about platforms, and it's really not about platforms and terminology, but it's really more about the different models through which a patient and a provider interact. So you'll hear terms like telemedicine, telehealth, e-health, virtual care, e-visits, e-care, and they all mean slightly different things to different people depending on who you're talking about to. But in essence, telehealth is really simply a tool for access. If you think about a patient being disparate from the location of services, or even a provider who it's not feasible or practical to do outreach, but patients can't get to them, it's really a tool for helping bridge that gap of distance and time and improving access. The additional piece that we found out as we change and move away from the traditional model of telehealth, which we're going to talk about in a minute, is that we see telehealth also impacting our population's health belief systems and engaging them in ways that help them improve their own health conditions. We often talk about telehealth being about technology. People think it's about technology, but it's really about the relationships that exist before we put the technology in place. And those most important relationships are between the clinician and the patient. And again, we'll talk about some of those specific to nursing, but the first instance of telehealth's use in the United States was in 1954 in the areas of telepsychiatry, where psychiatrists were seeing patients and also supervising and mentoring students and doing case consultations for between a general psychiatrist and specialty psychiatrist. The term telemedicine was used back then. Around probably the early 1990s to mid-1990s, we began to see nursing professionals using telehealth. We began to see home health agencies using telemedicine. And we didn't really like the term telemedicine as it denotes the relationship between a physician and a patient. And so the term telehealth came about. But it's really about this relationship. What is going on between the clinician and the patient, and can we create that in the virtual space and make it equal to or better than in-person care? What we know today is healthcare is not a place anymore. Patients don't want to go to the doctor. They don't want to go to the hospital. They don't want to go to the emergency department. But in many times, those are their only alternatives. What patients want to do is get paid, care in a space. And that space could be in their home, at school. I have a friend who stopped on the side of the highway in Chicago and took a call from her doctor that she'd been waiting for all day and had a live video visit with him over her phone. You know, we get sick when we're traveling, hotels, on vacation, for business. And so it's really no longer are we making the patient move around to where care is, but trying to move care around to where the patient is. This is why we see the huge advent or the huge uptick in utilization of online care companies, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, is because patients really want convenient care. They want a better experience with their healthcare system, and they want that healthcare system to move out to where they live and sleep and play. So let's talk about those models of telehealth, and it'll help give you a little bit better understanding as we show you some of the examples of what's going on in terms of how we accomplish this. The oldest and most prevalent use of telehealth in terms of a model is the traditional live interactive, where you have a clinician on one end and you have a patient on the other end, and they are not physically located in the same place. This uses, for the most part, uses video capabilities that are sufficient to do a full clinical exam of the patient. These are for new patient workups, for complex patient care follow-ups, for one-time consultations, certainly things like telestroke that are done on demand to emergency departments require this traditional live interactive. And you can see in the top picture, that's Dr. Bakir, one of our pulmonary medicine docs. He's in his own clinic in an exam room that typically would take an in-person patient. He has telehealth set up there, and instead of the 10 o'clock patient being sitting in the room when he goes on in there for his 10 o'clock telehealth patient, that patient's on TV. He can do, again, the full exam of the patient, interview the patient, have the patient walk, do a gait assessment, anything he needs that patient to do. In the other picture you see there, this is actually a patient of ours in the tertiary care center who needed to see a super specialist somewhere else in the state. And so, again, in the same exam room where she would be with the cardiologist, she's now having a consult with the cardiologist, the nurse practitioner that you see standing there, her granddaughter, I believe it was, and the cardiologist on the screen. So again, traditional live interactive is the big broadband, high quality interaction where we can do a full exam of the patient. What we've seen as mobile technologies have improved and cellular service has improved, the same traditional live two-way interactive just moved to online. So you'll hear the term online care, online interactive. It's simply the same traditional interactive model that's now moved to a different technology and a different communications platform. So you can use your cell phone, you can use a tablet, a laptop computer, you can use your PC at home or in a hotel or anywhere you have computing technology and can get to a web browser, you can use online care. Store and Forward is at some point along the way, we decided, you know what, there's probably a lot of services that are provided to patients where we don't actually have to see the patient. The patient can send us data, we can collect data about the patient, look at that data, and make an interpretation. Teleradiology is the first use of Store and Forward. We have telepathology, we have mobile retinal screening, and again, in modern day Store and Forward, we have lots of fitness apps, we have lots of devices that the patient wears that through their cell phone they can upload data to the clinician or a third-party website that the clinician can then access. And those of you who take care of patients with diabetes, this is, again, the CareLink Pro where I can upload my glucose meter just through a little Bluetooth dongle to my computer, and then my endocrinology team can access that data and help better take care of me. So again, Store and Forward is really everything about the patient except the patient being sent somewhere for an interpretation and recommendations. Concierge medicine, this is the direct-to-consumer model or the direct primary care model, the DPC, where a primary care provider sort of took a group of subscription patients. It's a much smaller practice. There's no insurance involved. It's a cash upfront service. I might pay $150 a month to have unlimited visits with the clinician, and then when I go into the office, I pay maybe $5. What's happened with concierge medicine is that has transitioned into what now we see as direct-to-consumer. So I can go on online, I can find an app, I can look for a company, I can register myself, enter my credit card information, and request a visit now. So the concierge-type relationship or direct primary care relationship with patients has transitioned itself into the direct-to-consumer. We also, and these are kind of hierarchical, so as you go up the food chain here, you see how much more independent the patient has become from the bricks and mortar healthcare system and how much more in charge of accessing healthcare that the patient actually becomes. The next one is the patient self-help. These are sites like WebMD, Amwell, where you can go in, you can check your symptoms. I used this recently for something I had. 10, 15 years ago, I used a website like this to to, my background is emergency services. So I used a website like this to get the Canadian ankle sprain scale and figure out if I needed an x-ray or not. And of course I didn't, which was good because it was about 2 weeks later that I decided to go to the doctor. So these types of sites, patient self-help sites where the patient is going in, asking questions, getting answers. A lot of these sites are driven on the back end by artificial intelligence, which is just picking up individual words, looking at birthdays, calculating ages based on an algorithm, and making decisions. So you may get to the end of a visit on one of these websites and never actually interact with a human being. A lot of these websites do employ nurses and nurse practitioners to be the clinicians on the back end, and you're interacting with the patient in an asynchronous fashion. And the last hierarchical, where we are kind of right now stepping into the doorway, is artificial intelligence, algorithmic medical decision making. And this is where technology, remember the old IBM Watson? This is where technology and artificial intelligence are starting to enable the patient to self-diagnose and make determinations and decisions about how they're going to access care, and also helping clinicians, particularly nurses who do remote monitoring, who engage patients in the home in terms of early symptom management, knowing if the patient's going to get into problems 5 to 7 days from now. So when you look at some of these examples, the ECG up in the right-hand corner is an iPhone. You buy a little $100 finger sensor, you put your fingers on, and it gives you an ECG rhythm. This is particularly useful for very astute patients who have atrial fibrillation to help them determine, where do I go next? Do I just take my meds like I'm supposed to, but I forgot this morning? Do I call my primary care doctor and ask a question? Do I go to my primary care doctor as a walk-in, or should I go straight to the emergency department? All of our remote monitoring equipment, our home spirometries, our home O2 sensors, blood pressure machines, weight scales, that interact with the healthcare team and tell the patient everything's good based on a set of algorithms that have been established for the patient, or tell the patient you need to call your doctor, or better yet, alerts the healthcare team to call the patient. Several years ago, I went to the Consumer Electronics Show, and there was a lot of fitness industry people there. And when they found out I was from the medical industry, they wanted to show me all their gadgets and cool stuff, and wanted to know, was there an application for healthcare? And now today we see all of that fitness technology migrated into healthcare. I've got a friend who gives a Fitbit to every one of his patients with CHF, and when they come in and he says, did you walk the last week? He knows exactly whether they did or not. Down in the left-hand corner, you'll see there with your iPhone, you can do your own ultrasound. You know, I've got mixed feelings about that. I'm not quite sure I like that or not. But again, it puts a tool in the hands of the patient so that they can make decisions about how they access the healthcare system. So again, this is a hierarchical model from traditional live interactive, which is sort of the gold standard. Then we see varying degrees of distance between the patient and the healthcare system, and pushing out more tools to the patient in terms of helping them make decisions about their own healthcare access to the system. These models also keep the patient better engaged with the healthcare team. And when we talk about being better engaged with the healthcare team, this is typically with nurse care coordinators, nurse case managers, the patient-centered medical home models are nurse-driven and nurse care team models. When we talk about telehealth, we're really nowadays talking about these models in terms of how does the patient access the system and how many tools does the patient have at their disposal. As I thought about this, this presentation. It was interesting for me to go back and think about the role of nursing in healthcare and the evolution of nursing. And if you go way back to Clara Barton, Clara Barton was all about care for the sick and injured. And healthcare was really about care for the sick and injured. You went to the hospital to die. You only went to the doctor if you needed something cut off or cut out. So nursing really started as a result of needing to provide care for people who are sick and injured. Over the years, we began to recognize the need for really talking to patients, for helping them through their healthcare encounter, for educating them. Around the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, when attention was placed on improving the process of care, who knows the process of care better than nurses? And so we began to see quality assurance, which was a lot of nursing activity around trying to figure out what the heck we were doing in healthcare and how did we get data to change it. One of the problems with looking at the early process of care improvements was that we collected a lot of data, but we didn't do anything with that. And it was nursing questions about why are we spending all this time and energy on collecting data if we're not going to use the data to influence changes that improve the process of care. And we eventually got to the point where nurses were driving standards of care, patients need something better from us, and let's put some nursing standards of care around that at least, so on a day-to-day basis, the people who are responsible for 90% of patient outcomes have standards by which they practice. And then nursing evolved again into providing oversight to the delivery of care in terms of being responsible for helping drive the healthcare system in a way that delivered better care. And they did that through really assisting with improving quality and efficiency. As nursing numbers went down, patient needs went up, acuity went up, hospitals ratcheted down on the number of resources. My mother, when she was a nurse in 1940s, it was one RN and one LPN for 49 patients. So we've come a long way since that time, but we've also backed off from probably some better nurse-to-patient ratios that we've had in the past. And then eventually nurses took on more leadership in driving healthcare delivery. I could count probably 20 years ago on one hand the number of nurse CEOs of hospitals, nurse CEOs of clinics, and now today you see nurses quite frequently in those roles. And nurses today are leading the transformation in healthcare. We can talk about the Institute of Quality Six Chasms, but the people who make that happen are nurses. And so we are essential and vital to the transformation in healthcare because, again, we're the ones directly taking care of patients and helping influence the decisions that are made around that patient. And I believe very strongly that nurses are the most patient-centered people in the healthcare system. And one of our jobs today is really ensuring that the healthcare system remains patient-centered. In my program that I run here, the telehealth program, it's interesting. We'll get a call from a telehealth site that says, well, we called to get a patient scheduled, but they told us no. And so my nurse comes to me, and I'm like, okay, so let's call the manager, and then let's call the nurse back, and then let's do this. And some days we forget that it's really about the patient and not about the fact that we're busy or we don't have a slot or something like that. So, again, it's really nurses are in a very critical leadership position today ensuring that our healthcare systems stay patient-centered. So when I think about the innovation in the role of nursing and how that's led us to be in leadership positions in nursing as well as be in the virtual care world, You know, we've seen new roles that really empower nurses to really be more involved in and driving a better patient experience for our patients. Concierge nursing, whether it's one nurse to one patient, is actually used quite frequently in China. If you come into the clinic and you just want a regular visit, it's 8 yuan is about $1.10. And if you want VIP care, then you get your own nurse and your own doctor for 12 yuan, so for about $1.60. So again, that one nurse to one patient, our care navigators, our care coordinators are real similar to concierge nursing. And again, that's where we begin to see the need for nursing to really coordinate care across the health spectrum. Discharge planners, transitional care nurses, again, those nurses who are in a position of helping to educate patients and chaperone them through the healthcare system. Clinical informatics is an area that nursing got into about 20 years ago, helping with the electronic health record, helping improve the process of care, genetics and the human genome. And then we see nurse-led healthcare initiatives without supervision requirements. The evolution of the advanced practice registered nurse, who now can prescribe and in many states does not need that practice supervise. And really, it's about improving access while lowering cost. And we see nurses involved heavily in those discussions in terms of really innovating the healthcare system and innovating the role of nursing. So let's talk about the role of nursing in virtual care. I use the term virtual care because it's just really about when the patient and the provider aren't in the same location, what's the role of nursing in that whole experience? Well, the first role is the telepresenter, and this is the person that's on the end with the patient. That person has four jobs. When I do training with nurses or my staff does training, we talk about the four jobs. They're there to be the patient advocate, to make sure the patient gets what they need, that understands, can communicate, and is comfortable on the visit. And for the same thing for the provider, to make sure that the provider gets the clinical information they need, that they can do an appropriate exam, and they can interact with the patient. Telepresenters are also the key to success of the program at the regional site or at the smaller facility or at the referral facility. They're the ones looking for opportunities to save patients travel time, save patients money, or to help patients make the decision to access specialty care when they're reluctant to travel. And they also look at identifying patients who could really benefit from a telehealth encounter with a clinician. The telehealth coordinator, again, is a person who's a patient advocate who takes a little bit broader role in coordinating the patient and provider needs for telehealth. This is a person who may work at the patient site, who may also work at the provider site. This is someone who, again, is identifying patients who would benefit from the use of telehealth, where it's a better connection to the healthcare system, better engagement with the healthcare provider, or a patient who's unstable and really needs that day-to-day monitoring that nursing can provide. And then they also, the telehealth coordinators really involved strategically in looking for new opportunities for patient care. If a site has dermatology, pulmonary medicine, and oncology, but patients are having a heck of a time accessing rheumatology care, they're there to really look for, can we get a rheumatologist over telehealth to see our patients? And then these people are typically the people involved in quality improvement and performance management, helping with reporting, patient satisfaction, those types of things. A clinical coordinator is typically a person who works at the sort of telehealth office or the place where the telehealth program is managed. This person helps develop policies and procedures, you know, writes a lot of the instructional manuals for the telepresenters, and also does a lot of the training for telepresenters as well as clinicians. They assist with setting up new clinical services and figuring out the workflow, which is the daily operations, what happens before, during, and after the visit, and how do we create that again from a provider and nursing and patient perspective in the virtual space. These are people that also help with scheduling and access and making sure that patients are getting the care they need in a timely fashion. The telehealth director, it was interesting, when I took my position in 1997 at Marshfield Clinic, there were no, well, I don't know, I better not say that, because Tina might tell me I'm wrong, which would be wonderful, but there were very few, if any, nurses running telehealth programs. And my medical director and administrator believed that nurses should run programs. They shouldn't be out of marketing, IT, or business development. A telehealth program should be run by someone who understands the process of clinical care. So a telehealth director would be involved in really communicating throughout the organization, looking at performance management. Is the care as good as or better than in-person care? Is the relationship as good as or better than before we had telehealth in place? And if anything is found to really not be meeting the goals of the program, to help develop a plan to course correct. And certainly then networking inside the organization and outside the organization with other telehealth organizations, other telepresenters, other nursing leadership in terms of looking at what's happening in the world abroad and making sure that the program that we're running really is meeting standards. I'm an executive director, someone like myself or Tina really works at the organizational and executive level in helping set the strategic direction for the organization in terms of using virtual strategies across the healthcare system. This is a person who sits on the executive team or interfaces with the executive team and really works, again, to listen, to watch for, and to help develop opportunities to use virtual care for the benefit of patients. This person also works at the state and national level to help advance public policy so that patients can get the care they need. And then national experts, again, we have quite a few of us out there that are RNs, and we've risen to this national expert level, I believe, because we really understand the healthcare system. We understand what patients need. We understand what providers need. And so we really are in an excellent position to provide the leadership that's needed in developing quality and patient-centered telehealth programs. We serve as subject matter experts for public policy advancement. Currently, we're moving a very comprehensive telehealth reform bill through the state in Illinois here, and I've been asked by everyone to be the subject matter expert for that. Again, I don't believe I would be in that position if it weren't for my nursing background. And then really, I believe our job is as nursing leaders in telehealth to mentor other nursing leaders as well. When people call me and say, who should we have run our telehealth program? It takes me about a 1/1,000,000th of a second to say you need an RN or a nurse in charge of your program. So nurses take care of patients. These are two of our telepresenters in a little teeny hospital called Mason District in Illinois here. That's Casey and Deb. That's the telehealth cart they use. That's the sort of the interface to the clinician. And again, they are critical to the success of any encounter between a patient and a clinician, as well as making that patient feel comfortable and getting the clinician the diagnosis diagnostic information they need. They run the stethoscope, they listen through the stethoscope, they use the otoscope, the handheld cameras, do all the components of the exam. They are, in essence, the hands of the clinician. So when you're conducting a virtual exam, again, you have a clinician on one end. Again, you saw the picture of Dr. Bakir earlier. He's talking with a patient that's about, that site's about 3 hours by car through rural Illinois, which is not too bad unless it's deer season or the roads are flooded. And the bottom picture is Dr. Suki. He's a pediatric cardiologist. He's working in clinic, seeing a patient actually from the same location, a 14-year-old with cardiovascular disease, whose father would not take him to see the doctor. So again, we, because of the nurses on that end pushing and convincing the family to use telehealth, that 14-year-old boy got the care he needed. And who's on the other end? Again, the telepresenters, who are typically going to be nurses of some licensure, because we like that additional assessment value. We like that additional clinical expertise that nurses bring to that encounter. And this is Dr. Bakir. This is what the patient sees. So again, we look at this from a nursing perspective. If I were in the room assisting a patient with seeing a clinician, what would I want that patient to experience? What would the patient want to experience? And then on the other hand, what does that clinician need? So this card is about 3.5 feet away from the patient, who's, as you can see, sitting in an exam room. Same thing as if they were accessing in-person care. And Dr. Bakir is talking to them. This is a 32-inch TV, so his head is the same size as if he were standing there. Now, some days it's hard to get a physician's head inside a TV screen, but most days we can do that fairly well. That's a joke, by the way. So again, this is kind of what it looks like from the patient's perspective. It takes about 90 seconds for a patient to take to communicating over video with a clinician, and they simply forget that they're talking to somebody on TV. Other forms of virtual nursing practice, again, the oldest one, honestly, is nurse triage. If you think about nurse triage, the patient and the provider are not in the same location. Nurse care coordination, nurse care coordinators use the telephone all the time. They use remote monitoring, and they do interact with patients at home through live traditional two-way video. Remote patient monitoring, early symptom management, the management of high-risk, at-risk, and near-risk populations, transitional care. I've had several lactation specialists who are RNs set up practices to help new moms who have gone home who have lactation problems, to connect right to them in the home, watch the process of trying to get the baby to suckle, and coaching the mother through that. Certainly wound care specialists are one of the oldest uses of telehealth as well, and this particular nursing practice is excellent for the store and forward type modalities, where you're sending a case file, a picture of the patient's wound, and you're getting an interpretation back. Home health specialists have been using remote monitoring since the 1980s, so 30 plus some years. They've been using remote monitoring as a tool to extend nurses to a wider geographic region, allow them to see and take care of more patients, and they've done this all along without actually getting any reimbursement for it. We have congestive heart failure specialists, APNs, and RNs who work in congestive heart failure clinics, who basically are in charge of the entire care of the patient. And then certainly health educators and health coaches can use distance technologies to engage patients. We have diabetes educators. RN, certified psychiatric RNs. We have oncology RNs that are using telehealth to engage their patients. So when you think about practicing at a distance as a nurse, there's some medical legal issues around virtual nursing practice. This is only a 90-minute webinar, so we're not going to go into all of these, and Tina's going to talk about some of them. But think about in-person care, and for the most part, everything you do over telehealth has to be the same as in-person care. You cannot practice outside the scope of practice. The ethical and moral principles apply to any encounter over telehealth. You have to make sure you're aware of the licensure requirements in the state in which you're practicing or if you're crossing state lines. Most of the time, nurses don't have to be credentialed for practice, but as you get into the advanced practice licensures, you'll need to think about credentialing. Do you need to be enrolled in health plans to get paid? Again, telehealth removes the barriers of distance and time, and so there's really, you know, you could see a patient anywhere in the world. So how do you get paid for that? So there's some issues there with the narrow networks that we're seeing in terms of reimbursement. For prescriptive authority, for RNs, APNs who have prescriptive authority, you need to make sure you're aware of the controlled substances and prescriptive authority rules around prescribing as a result of a telehealth visit in states, which may be different than your regular prescriptive authority in terms of seeing a patient in person. Documentation is exactly the same. You need to be documenting exactly the same as you saw the patient in person. Liability and risk, we get these questions all the time. Probably Tina can tell you 100 stories just like I can. There is no additional liability or risk when you see a patient over telehealth. And certainly you want to be aware of patient satisfaction. I can't even name you one study, where patients weren't satisfied, and probably better than in-person care with a telehealth encounter. There was one study done by inmates in a correctional facility who had access to care over telehealth. They said they liked the care, that they felt the clinician was empathetic. When asked the question, would you refer their friends, they all said no. And, of course, the reason they say no is because they don't get a trip out of the facility. So, again, when you look at the examples of where do nurses practice, this top picture is our tele-NICU program. There's a little teeny baby in the warmer there. We've got the telehealth there. The nurse simply has to call the 1-800 line, say, I need a neonatologist, and within about 2 to 3 minutes, the neonatologist will dial in, be able to do a full exam, direct the nurses as to what to do for the infant, and then they, as a healthcare team, make a decision as to whether or not the infant needs to be transferred. The bottom picture there, we're taking care of an infant in the home. This is a patient with, I believe, cochlear implants. And the ENT nurse coordinator is doing a follow-up visit with the patient. And then the bottom picture to the right is our tele-ICU installation. Again, this is for hospitalists to be able to dial in and see the patient from home, saving time in terms of getting the assessment done and making decisions about the patient. And honestly, telehealth nursing practice can be just as simple as talking to patients on the telephone. So I've got a couple pictures here. You know, I'm in a nursing leadership role. I'm in a nursing leadership role in telehealth. And, you know, every day is different for me. Every day is exciting and wonderful, all the way from making a difference in one patient's life because they got a visit over telehealth because I could create a program and get clinicians to see patients and make it so that patients enjoyed being seen over telehealth, to some of these things. In the upper left-hand corner, this is a Take Your Kids to Work Day. So we invited all the kids to come in, and we showed them telehealth. We showed them what their ears look like, what it looks like inside their mouth, and, of course, they all went, ooh, and yuck. And but, again, it really did show them a different use for some of the things they may see, like FaceTime and Skype. in the picture there with the slide that says yes, I'm leading a telehealth reimbursement summit, an all-day program we put together to help people in the state be educated about how to set up your telehealth program so you're successful from a clinical perspective, but also how do you get paid? We have to get paid in healthcare organizations, so we put the summit together to really look at helping people move forward with a stable, financially viable program. Underneath there, the picture of the eye, we've set up a table in the middle of the state capitol and invited all the legislators to come and see what telehealth is, educate them, ask them for some reforms in public policy so that we can, again, you know, my goal is always as a nursing leader is to ensure that patients get seen. And the bottom left-hand picture, that's Lieutenant Governor Sanguinetti and myself, and on the screen is Cindy Womack. She's a nurse practitioner in neurology. Her specialty is I think it's movement disorders. And we've invited her to do a demo for the Lieutenant Governor. This is a site about 3.5 hours away from where Cindy is. And all of those patients in that location now have access to Cindy's clinical practice. And so part of the work I do every day as the executive director in a leadership role in nursing is to help facilitate these kinds of events and opportunities to really showcase how telehealth makes a significant difference in the lives of our patients. So with that, I'll turn it over to Tina.
Okay. Good afternoon. And thank you so much for mentioning Nina and Tina have been aligned in many national conferences, but this is the first co-presentation that we've ever done, and I'm very honored to be aligned with her. So I think what I'd like to say is in nursing, one thing that we do is empathize. And so nurses can provide and replace themselves. They can put themselves in their patient. They can understand what they're feeling. And they can also make great decisions on clinical flow, and they can make outcomes for patients better. So next slide. So just a disclaimer, I am one of the founders of a company, and I am not talking about that today, but I do have to disclaim it. Next. And again, telehealth, as Nina said, the use of electronic information and telecommunication technologies to support long-distance clinical health care, patient and professional health-related education, and public health and Health Administration. Next. And so in Arkansas, we have multiple originating sites, and so that we can not only have pathways for digital audio and video imaging and then go to a higher level of care or to a provider of some certain specialty and receive services. Next slide. And so we put the patient first. Every program I have, and that's across the whole spectrum, from actually a fetus all the way to an elderly population. And when I do a program, I look at the patient first and then back into what the need is and how to approach it with technology. Next slide. So in Arkansas, you can look at our healthcare disparity. There's not many of our counties that actually have that have all of the necessary physicians to do services. And so where our motto, and it is written up in our hallway, where you live should not determine where you, whether you live or die. Next slide. And so also in urban areas, you can't get to places sometimes, specifically with traffic or other issues related just to the urbanized area. And so you have to think of it both not only rural, but also disparities related to high population density places. Next. This is our baseline infrastructure. When I look at developing a new program, I have to understand what the healthcare technologies are that are involved in that health problem. We have a 24/7 call center that is manned by nurses, paramedics, and other administrative support people. I want to make sure our foundation is based on evidence-based practices. I want to make sure that we have some kind of care coordination or transition of care from acute to the home. And then specialty expertise that's needed and required. And also, how do we train those that's going to be involved in the technology? Next slide. And so the other thing that we look at here is I want to use everybody to their maximum scope of practice, from doctors, physician assistants, APRNs, pharmacy, nursing, and how do we integrate and communicate to the most effective manner to have the best outcome for the patient. Next. And so in Arkansas, I can tell you we are building a connected healthcare system. Our hospitals, we are connected to all of our hospitals through the emergency department. We provide education infrastructure, and I'll go into that more. We try to understand the social determinants of health, and as being a statewide perinatal nurse, I did understand all the disparities related to coming to an academic medical center for care, especially with patients that are very sick, but they have very limited resources and support in their local area. And so the reason that we had this evolution is our traditional model is come to the physician, but now it's transitioning. What can we go to the home with so that they don't have to come to the physician? And again, evidence-based practice has to be there. You have to have decreased practice variation and have some protocol-driven methodologies regarding big, high-cost things like hypertension, diabetes, obesity, all those kind of things have to have a good, strong infrastructure based on evidence and actually have good outcomes related. Next slide. So in Arkansas, at UAMS, the Center for Disability Health received $100 million through the Department of Commerce in 2010, and we deployed a healthcare, education, and research broadband network across Arkansas. And one of the reasons that we did this, not only as Nina had referenced to in her talk, is this is the hardwired infrastructure, but also this infrastructure supports all the way to the iPad, to the phone. We have created the technology that will use all of those entities to do care. This hardwired is very good, especially in acute care, because you want to make sure it works because you're trying to save a life. In a clinical setting, you may not need but an iPad or a desktop with a webcam. But certainly there are different indications for different technologies and infrastructure. The next slide. So our members are hospitals. Every hospital in Arkansas, which there's about 80 of them, medical clinics, health department clinics, mental health. We have some PT and speech therapy clinics, aging clinics. And then as well, we have community colleges, universities, and then some skilled nursing facilities associated with this. We try to connect them all on the same platform so that everybody can use the system depending on what the need is specific to the area in Arkansas. Next slide. And so connected health, and this could have not happened in the past because of competition between hospitals and cities, or competition or felt hierarchical hospital. A lot of physicians and a lot of administrators in hospitals felt intimidated by high level, like level one trauma centers and things like that. But when you do connected health and connect all these entities together and communicate across the platform, the best thing is it's going to help the patient. And so I'm all about that. So in Arkansas, with us being all connected, we can maximize our healthcare resources, provide increased opportunities to engage clinicians, have patients self-manage their care if they can, or support their management at home. And so using any kind of technology that supports that is going to make a better life for all of us. Next. And so when we originated our model, it was to bring subspecialty access to local hospitals that could not get that service. And what I'm meaning by that is if you are a 25-bed critical access hospital, how can you afford to support a neurologist, a infectious disease specialist, a rheumatologist, an endocrinologist? You can't. And so the people in your community have to go drive to a higher populated area to receive those services. So the model here is to bring, in Arkansas, is to bring subspecialty access closer to the patient for better outcomes. Next. So one of the biggest things that I think that can happen with this connected health that we are all wanting is to go to the home with higher acuity patients. This patient here has ALS. She's on the ventilator at home. The ALS Society asked for us to help her because, number one, to get an ambulance to an outpatient center, that is not a reimbursable service. And so what we did for this lady is we brought the pulmonologist and the ENT subspecialist to her home. And so we integrated and used technologies so that the pulmonologist and the ENT could look at her trach site. They could look at the settings for her ventilator, and they can certify ongoing support for that home care that she is receiving. I think other things that can happen, I've been a home health nurse in the past, is if I could see my patient, if a family member's calling, they're worried about some sort of problem with a patient, and if there was a virtual, you know, network that's HIPAA compliant that I could see that patient in and triage them, and then do I need to come or do I not? Do I need to send them to the ED or not? Those kind of things to discern critical questions and also costly questions that need to be answered, I think is very important because we know that healthcare costs continue to rise. And unfortunately, I think that we are going to have to use technology in different ways to eventually have cost savings. And these kind of things, just like this lady, this helped them save a $6,000 ambulance bill to an outpatient clinic. And so I think that we have to think in those manner in the future. Also, post-op follow-ups, a lot of patients get high-level surgeries. They go home 2 hours away. And all the doctor needs to do is make sure that they're okay. Let's look at your wound, it's healing well or not. And so things like that are also efficient, not only for the patient, but also for the physician. And so things that are commonality that create cost savings, that produce best outcomes, I'm all about that. And also I'll tell you on this patient, I could have brought pizza to all of my crew, and nothing would have been better than what we did for this lady. It was a team builder. Everybody felt engaged, and we knew that we had helped somebody over some critical things that she needed, some services and certifications. Next slide. And so remote patient monitoring, I think, is still going to be a feature here and the technologies, because when you have top 10% of insured patients are accruing and are the most costly, right? And so those are including, you know, severe diabetics, severe hypertensives, people that have, you know, severe chronic diseases. How can we monitor them so that they don't get sick and don't have to present? They stay stable. And so remote monitoring is a methodology to do that. When you remote monitor, though, also you need to have some algorithmic outlier kind of notification. So if a patient's weight it's a patient that has CHF, well, you know that you want to weigh them every day. And if they do have a 5-pound, let's expedite that to the physician. Let's get an order, and let's get that limited and take care of that while the patient's at home, not when they have to present with shortness of breath to the ED. And so all those kind of things impact that patient on quality of life, feeling better, not staying within, you know, in the ED for several hours, or being admitted for observation until they get the fluid off. So those kind of things create much better outcomes and also are cost efficient. Next slide. Follow-up and case management is also critical. And we have many of those kind of infrastructures in our programs. And I do believe that they work. I do think also from an acute setting, a patient goes into the home, being able to talk to people, being able to understand what's going on with them, and also navigate them through the healthcare problem that they are having is very instrumental in their outcome. Next slide. Again, sensors are great, and monitoring is great, and we're going to be doing more and more of this. There is one, you know, area of caution is if a layperson does not know how to interpret that data or interpret it wrong, those are things that we, in considerations that we have to assure doesn't happen. And so as technology increases in healthcare, some of those things are going to fall out. So I feel like sensors are wonderful, but again, like Nina says, it has to be in some kind of algorithmic best outcome infrastructure and not for lay people to interpret. Next slide. And so she touched again on what is artificial intelligence. EICU uses artificial intelligence not only to look at all of their perimeters, their EKG, their central line, perfusion, all of the indications related to their age, race, and their status with their blood pressures, all of their vital signs, and then they dispense recommendations related to their treatment based on their diagnosis and all of their vital measurements. And then these predictors also give doctors recommendations for medicines and other treatments for better outcome. I think that there's more and more that's going to be coming, and the more that we understand what that is and also how to do systems engineering within the healthcare infrastructure is going to produce much better outcomes for our patients. Next slide. So, again, cost efficiencies with technology can be better management of the chronic diseases, shared healthcare professional staffing, reduced travel times, not only for physicians, but most importantly for our patients, and then fewer and shorter hospital stays where patients can stay at home. Next slide. In our local community, it increases patients to go to their local clinics. It enhances the rural clinic's reputation if they're associated with a high-level academic institution or other hospital that exceeds in safety and patient outcomes. It keeps revenue in the community hospital and the community clinics, and it promotes economic development because they have other healthcare resources in their community besides primary care. Next slide. So I wanted to tell you a couple of programs that we have in Arkansas that lay upon our infrastructure. Arkansas Saves is one of our programs, and that's stroke assistance through virtual emergency support. So what that means is here at UAMS, we have vascular neurologists that will use telemedicine technology into the emergency departments of 54 of our 80 hospitals and assess stroke patients. Next slide. So our solution, we have 54 of the hospitals that are acute stroke ready sites. 84% of all Arkansans are now within a 30-minute drive. 99% are within an hour. And we have a statewide implementation of nationally recognized evidence-based treatment guidelines. Our vascular neurologist is available to these sites within 10 minutes. And our video support assists with all of those connections and make sure that everybody's connected so that we can deliver the service. Next slide. Another program that we have is ANGELS, which is our origin. I am a maternal fetal medicine nurse. Our medical director is a maternal fetal medicine physician. And so you can see all of the access points that we have in Arkansas. Some of those sites are just for face-to-face consults. Some of those sites are with health department clinics. And we also have sites within hospitals in the radiology department so that we can do live ultrasounds on these patients. Next slide. This is our stroke infrastructure. So not only do we have the 54 hospitals that we deliver the service in, but we also have sites where patients can be transferred to post-TPA. And so our infrastructure is connecting all of these institutions across Arkansas, and we're contractually, all of these entities have contracts with us to do this service, and we all, when the patient hits the door, they are treated the same. So it's protocol-driven, the way that we treat the stroke in every one of these hospitals. And it has been fantastic, the outcomes that we are getting. Before we had this infrastructure, only 1 to 3% of Arkansans who presented with a stroke received TPA. Next slide. So another program, we are working with our trauma system, which is housed in the Arkansas Department of Health, is we created an image repository for stroke when we started it. And so we presented the trauma, and so you could use our trauma, our image repository, and move images when patients have to be moved to higher levels of care. And so they said, yes, we want to do that. And so now when a patient is in a remote area in a critical access hospital, maybe they had a car wreck, maybe they had some other kind of trauma, when they present there, any imaging that was done and can be now transported to a higher level where the patient is going to have to go to get treatment. And we can push those images to that new site. Back in the day when we first started doing this, we just had to download from one picture archive system and we would download it on a disk or a floppy disk or a hard disk, stick it in the stretcher where the patient was, and then when the patient got to the ED, they put that disk in and it was corrupted or it didn't integrate with their PAC system. And so this dispels all of that. And we push over 4 million images through this modality to help patients not only get quicker care, but also decrease radiation, not getting re-x-rayed. Next slide. And so all the value here, again, is images are available prior to the patient's arrival to the higher level of care. Treatment is planned in advance. Patients aren't re-imaged. Time and money saved, and time to definitive care is immediate. Next slide. And so we also use our infrastructure in the EDs to do hand. We have a lot of hand injuries in Arkansas, and we have burns, and we only have 16 beds in Arkansas for burns. And so a lot of patients were inappropriately transferred. Either you couldn't reattach a digit, the burn was not severe enough. And so there's different, and I am a nurse, been a nurse for 33 years, and I can give you an example. My father burnt himself real bad on the back of his calf, and it scared me to death. I took him to the local ED, and so I had them connect up with a burn surgeon, and they told us how to clean it, wrap it, and they'd see him in the morning. And if it was me, Tina Benton, looking at my clinical skills, not that I'm an expert in burn, but I thought he needed to be transferred. He did not. And so we took him up the next day. And so there's variation on the clinical expertise that we have out there in Arkansas, and this helps us discern that much better and guide patients where they need to go, as well as keep patients home if they don't need to be in a chopper or an ambulance going somewhere and get discharged 24 hours later. Next slide. Other programs that we have in Arkansas, we do have a big EICU with another hospital here. Cardiology is good, chronic care management. I think another valuable thing that's going to be coming is EDs to nursing home or SNF units, because a lot of patients are unnecessarily transported back and forth between the two. But if they were connected and started communicating with each other about their patients, looking at patients prior to transfer, a lot of definitive care could be done locally, or you expedite them because they are sick and they do need emergency services. We are starting also school-based health clinic infrastructure where that we create primary care at the local community site and connect it to that local community school-based clinic, or also behavioral health. We do dental screenings. We have a grant that helps us do school-based health clinics, and the Department of Education here in Arkansas is really adopting this, and it's really helping get treatment to some critically ill kids that are in school, but also behaviorally, mental health, keeping patients on their medicines and medical management is all very important. Next slide. One thing that also I want to tell you is education is key. And so before we do any other telemedicine or anything, a lot of times we go into different entities with education because all providers need to be educated, and we try to provide a platform for a multidisciplinary approach. Next slide. Another thing that would be accessible for all of your nurses is the telehealth resource centers. They're across Arkansas. We have one, and then they're nationally, and many of them kind of specialize. For example, the Connected Health Policy has all the information related to laws across every state and related to telemedicine. And then there's a specific TRC, for example, in Alaska that can help guide you with technologies, because that's another thing, a lay nurse trying to discern what technologies they need can be difficult. Always try to go to a higher level of expertise before you try to pick technologies to use. I think that is a key. Don't just rely on what vendors tell you. Next slide.
Tina?
Yes.
Hi, it's Winifred. Hey, listen, I am sorry to do this. This has probably been the quickest 90 minutes I have ever spent. But
yep.
We only have about 7 minutes left to the webinar, and we have a couple of questions that have been asked.
Sure.
So, if you could do maybe one or two more slides that you think would be key for everyone to be very much aware of, and then we'll go to the questions, that would be great.
Okay. I think I can end here. I think, you know, for Arkansas, our telehealth resource center, also we have a lot of podcasts. We have information related to laws, Medicare reimbursement versus Medicaid or other private payers. There's out there with these telehealth resource centers that will give you knowledge base that you will need to kind of navigate through this new technology with healthcare.
Okay,
and,
great. So
and I can end it there.
Along those lines of paying, perhaps it's Tina and Nina, you could answer one of the two questions, and is, do states have nursing standards and regulations that govern their ability to bill for telehealth?
Yeah. So this is Nina. So I'll give the first stab. Again, we have to think about this a little bit differently. The ability to pay to bill for telehealth and get paid is really a payer policy. So a state sort of doesn't really mandate that through nurse practice acts. It doesn't mandate it through the medical board. It's really the ability to bill and get paid is really more a payer issue and supervision requirements. So that you wouldn't see that anywhere in state laws except in regulatory language for Medicaid, which may restrict the eligible provider to not include an APN or a CDE or someone with a RN license who sees patients.
Right. And Tina, I think you were also going to touch on this, right?
Yes. So I think it's very highly variable. I think, you know, remember that where the patient is where you're delivering the service. So if you're on a border area and an APRN delivering, you know, as a provider doing a service, you have to remember in the context of where that patient is in the state rules and regs where that patient is. And so that's one key thing. I think the other thing is make sure that your liability insurance covers you. Make sure your network is HIPAA compliant. Make sure that you can do the service legally, as Nina was talking. I was trying to think if there was anything else.
I think another resource would be the National Council of State Boards of Nursing.
Yes. I agree with that. I think if you will go all the way down to the end of the slides, I do have a list of resources. And I think the American Nurses Association has a draft out there of best practices rules related to nursing and telemedicine and telehealth. And so you could look at their site. They do have, I think they have their draft there, and it's up for comment. And then, of course, you know, in Arkansas, we do have a telehealth resource center, and then the national TRC and policy, you can access them for specifics about your state and what is eligible for not only your service as a nurse, but also what the reimbursement laws and regulatory is.
And I think some of the other questions around licensure is essentially you just have to assume you have to be licensed where the patient is, unless there's a nursing compact in place and you're licensed in a compact state and practicing in another compact state, or the new APN compact gets passed and includes that. So, again, for nurses, the assumption is just go on the assumption you have to be licensed unless there's some compact in place.
Right.
The provider does not have to be located in the state where the patient is. That's actually the topic for the five-year legal battle with Teladoc in the state of Texas. So for right now, the provider does not need to be located in the state. In fact, the provider can be anywhere for the most part. The question about being in another country is they certainly can be in another country, but there are some restrictions for Medicare billing. So if they're traveling, they need to see a patient who has an acute change in their condition, and they're the only person who really can take care of it. They certainly can see the patient. Doesn't necessarily mean they have to bill for the service. A provider, for the most part, could not be sitting in France permanently and practicing back in the United States. And then the quality issues related to the above, I'm not exactly sure what that means, but if you're practicing within the scope of your license as a nurse or an advanced practice nurse, you're upholding the standards of care exactly the same for in-person care, and you're conducting all the elements of the encounter with the patient that you would if you did have that patient in person, there should be really no quality issues. And again, if the video interaction isn't equal to in-person care, and you as a practitioner are concerned that you're missing something, then you should complete the visit, but also schedule the patient for in-person care.
I totally ditto that. I totally agree.
Okay, so
it's 5:00, and if anybody would like to, if Dr. Antonetti and Tina could stay on, if anybody had other questions that they would like to ask over the phone, why don't you go ahead and do so now, and we'll take another couple of minutes if need be.
If you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. There are no questions at this time.
Okay. So, Dr. Antonetti and Benton, thank you so much for taking the time out, and not just this time, but the time in meeting with us and talking with us about what our interest was in featuring you and in preparing your documents. I look forward to other opportunities where we could potentially highlight your leadership. Most of all, thank you for what you do to helping improve people's access to care and providing the high quality care that you do. It's really very, very helpful for not only patients accessing care, but also for family caregivers. The support of family caregivers is huge in that regard. So I thank you both. And to all, I do want to reiterate, if you missed the section or would like to share this with your colleagues, and we highly encourage you to do so, please download this webinar. It will probably be available in about a week or maybe in 10 days, and it will be at www.campaignforaction.org/webinars. And of course, follow us on Twitter and join us on Facebook. We'd love to see you there. And with that, I thank our speakers and our operator, Nicole, and thank you to Scott.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good day.
You may now
disconnect. You too. Bye-bye.